Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1988 movie Tequila Sunrise.
Yeah, we are.
And this is Brother Drew's pick.
Sure is. Can't wait to find out what you thought of it.
You might want to lower those expectations.
No, man, I'm excited.
Well, I will let you drive. It's ostensibly your movie. I took some notes. I have some background. If you want to start there or if you want to go into the plot, what I'll leave it at your feet.
I'll introduce it. I chose Tequila Sunrise because this is a movie that I watched probably back in the very early 90s, back when we had a giant satellite dish on our house and a bunch of free movie channels and lots of time on my hands. So I watched just so many random movies because they happened to be on some one movie channel or another. And I watched this. And I remember liking it okay, a lot of star power. And then I just happened to be scrolling through HBO Max, and it was on HBO Max. And I was like, oh, sweet. This seems right up my alley. This movie has a tremendous pedigree. I mean, it's got the star power of Michelle Pfeiffer and peak of his career, Mel Gibson and Kurt Russell. It was written and directed by Robert Towne, one of the most iconic screenwriters in the history of cinema.
It had Raul Julia.
Yeah. It was like kind of a cops and robbers crime thriller, right? What could go wrong?
Yeah, indeed. I think it was a 6-foot parabolic dish, right? That's what the folks had.
Was this, I don't know. I was a little kid. It looked like it was 20 feet.
It was either 6 or 10 feet, but I'm thinking 10 feet. I don't know. I'm trying to remember knocking.
I bet it was 10.
It might have been 10 feet. I remember having to try and knock snow off of the top of it and having to like get a broom to reach the top of it. So
before Dad installed the giant vibrator.
Well, the Avalanche, I think it was called.
Uh-huh.
Which... I don't know that worked all that well, but
I think it did. He seemed pretty happy with it.
Oh,
he loved that giant vibrator.
Technology at the palm of your hand or something. Oh, that sounded really bad. Phrasing. I had until last night never seen this movie.
Right on. What? Yeah, this was an amazing movie.
Okay.
What were your what's your 30-second thought?
This movie has not aged well. That was my first thought.
It's true.
It wasn't awful. I mean, it wasn't dreck. It wasn't great. I think had I watched it in the 80s, late 80s, 88 is when it came out. I think had I watched it in a more time appropriate to when it was created, it might have felt a little more acceptable, but it was it seemed very disorganized and also just totally ridiculous.
Yeah, this movie was a mess. I found it to be really disappointing.
Uh-oh. Oh, well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
I'm still excited to talk about it. But, yeah, I thought it completely wasted Michelle Pfeiffer. She's been so great in other roles where she's given a lot to do. I mean, as Catman and Batman Returns, she's amazing in that movie. She's great in Scarface. But in this movie, she's just kind of ping-ponging back and forth between these two guys. And it's supposed to be some sort of love triangle, but it ends up just being more binary and indecisive, right, on her part. And this movie seemed to take away all of the agency of that character in a way that really bummed me out. I also thought it kind of wasted a peak like Mel Gibson. Like his character was so wussy, and I didn't need him to be like a super macho, like Stallone Schwarzenegger type, but
he could have been played by Bronson Pinchot.
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean he was very clever, and he was always outsmarting everybody. But he also seemed super passive, and just kind of like a beta male, which was the complete opposite of Kurt Russell's way too far in the other direction alpha male. You know, channeling Pat Riley from the 80s LA scene in like attitude and style. He would just go off half cocked for no reason, fly off the handle. I'm not convinced he's actually good at his job, because he also seems pretty smart, but he gets outwitted right up until the very end. I mean, he's smarter than his DEA counterparts, but that's not saying much. So, yeah, I was pretty disappointed in this movie. I expected better out of the screenplay. I mean, I forget the word you mentioned, but I said messy. This movie is so messy. You know, Robert Town he's really renowned for Chinatown, which is a very complicated plot, but a plot that was done a tremendous service by an extremely talented, if problematic, Roman Polanski. And I think Robert Town directing his own kind of messy plot really did a disservice to the story. I think it needed a stronger hand, because it's just this story kind of went all over the place.
This movie felt more to me like it was a Kurt Russell vehicle, that it was intended to be more of a Kurt Russell movie, that Mel Gibson was in it and Michelle Pfeiffer was in it, but Kurt Russell was kind of supposed to be the lead, which kind of fell apart quickly when the romance was clearly being pushed to away from him, I guess it would say. I think my bigger issue with the writing is that it had these huge bipolar shifts where they made Michelle Pfeiffer's character out to be super duper strong and smart and witty and absolutely independent, and then made her so completely and utterly unable to control her romance and love factors, that she immediately sleeps with Kurt Russell and then immediately sleeps with Mel Gibson a couple days later. And is
one of the worst sex scenes I've ever seen.
And is seemingly wrecked by both of the events emotionally. And then, And then they have some backstory about how she's had a horrible past with men. So I think in this day and age, I think that it just offends me because of this day and age, she would have been the protagonist period, or she should have been, and she could have been a very driving force. She should have been the main character, and the movie would have been much better serviced with her as the driver. And I think they could have pulled that off as a plot. They could have. I think this movie could have been better executed with her as kind of the central force, because the ping ponging back and forth. You're right. It was ping pong. It was disorienting, and then there was a lot of stuff that just wasn't necessary. They brought the son character in to try and give Mel Gibson's character some depth, except that it didn't, because he wasn't really. I mean, he basically was neglecting his kid. So, I mean, there's lots. Yep. I mean, there's lots of things wrong with it. But Robert Towne.
I just want to comment. You made such a great point about Michelle Pfeiffer's character Joanne. Like in one of her first scenes, she's being interrogated by the smarmy DEA agent, and she just hands him his hat because she is so smart and so aggressive and just really like an awesome boss bitch. And she's set up as like this really successful restaurateur who's in charge of a very popular restaurant and handles her staff and takes care of everybody. But yeah, great. A great start, a great character. But yeah, somewhere along the way, she just becomes helpless in the throes of passion to these two guys who I don't think are likable.
No. And aren't charismatic either.
No.
That's the problem. Not. I didn't believe the romance. So it was just so... there was no, to me, for my interpretation, I didn't see any romance. There was no reason for the characters to even be attracted to one another. Well, I take that back. There's no reason for her to be attracted to them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the screen is just dripping with star power and beautiful people, and there's no chemistry.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. Because, like I said, I think this could have been much better. And so if it's ever remade, you know, it could be done much. It could be. We could write it better, I bet. But I digress. Robert Towne. So I just typed up this list really quick for Brother E's enjoyment. Robert Towne, uncredited for a writing credit in The Parallax View.
Nice.
Wrote Chinatown. Writing credit. Mm-hmm. Writing credit for Shampoo.
I've never seen that.
Right. I don't actually think you can get it anymore. Oh, no. Sorry, different movie. I'm thinking of Hairspray. Never mind. He's got a writing credit, although under the name of P.H. Vazek for Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan.
Nice.
So I wonder if that's a David Lynch, you know... is it John Smitty? Anyway,
take my name off this movie.
Yeah, he got a writing. He got a story credit and screenplay credit for Days of Thunder. He got a writing credit and character credit for The Two Jakes. He got a screenplay credit for The Firm, and then he wrote apparently the screenplay for Mission Impossible 1 and Mission Impossible 2. And right now in pre-production. He is creating, or about to create, or may create, the TV movie prequel to the film Chinatown.
You know what that entire list of movies says to me? He doesn't know what to do with women.
Oh? Would you care to expound on that?
I mean, all of them. I haven't seen Parallax View, I haven't seen Shampoo. But Chinatown is great, hard-boiled kind of detective story. The women in that story are, they are caricatures at best. I mean, we saw what he did with Michelle Pfeiffer's character in this movie. The Mission Impossible movies, not great with the lady characters in those movies.
Days of Thunder.
Oh, Days of Thunder is the worst.
Yeah. The Firm was okay. Again, Tom Cruise, and I don't even remember who the woman was. I've seen it.
Triple Horn. Jean Triplehorn from Big Love and Basic Instinct.
You're right on the name. Jean Hackman was in that. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. I recognize her. I was trying to place the name. I don't know why I was. I thought it was somebody else. Anyway, the prequel, the TV movie prequel. I have so many questions, and I don't know that I want any of them answered.
I don't have any questions. There's nothing that makes me want to go back to the Chinatown universe. By the way, speaking of Roman Polanski, my first choice for this week was the movie Frantic. Have you seen that? The Harrison Ford movie Frantic.
Is that where he's going to like die in 24 hours?
No, I think he's framed for something in Europe. Anyway, it looked like a cool thriller that I'd always been meaning to watch. So I thought it'd be a fun discussion. But then I saw it was directed by Roman Polanski. I was like, no, I don't want to do it.
Well, I have mixed emotions about that. Because you can't discount everybody else. I mean, it's such a hard call because the movie might be great because Polanski just directed it, right? He didn't write it.
Right.
So, I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to spend money on it, but if it was available free, I would watch it because I'm not giving any money to Polanski. I guess that's my philosophy. I don't know if that's a good philosophy. That's the only one I got.
Yeah, well, if it was good, I didn't want to spend any time talking about praising him as an artist. I mean, I know it's...
Oh, I wouldn't have discussed him at all.
It's a complicated thing to separate the art from the artist, right? But yeah, I didn't feel like dealing with it.
Oh, I've seen that movie. Oh, it's not a good movie.
No?
I don't remember.
I made a good call then.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Tequila Sunrise.
To be honest with you, my recollection is that movie is worse than this movie. So
nice.
You may have dodged a bullet, as it were. So,
by the way, why was this movie called Tequila Sunrise?
He was drinking tequila sunrises, for one thing. That was his drink.
Was he?
Yeah.
They must have fallen asleep. I don't remember that at all.
So he was drinking a tequila sunrise at the restaurant. He was drinking a tequila sunrise at home by himself when somebody came. When it was raining. When it was all rainy and the cat came to the door and all that.
What kind of lunatic makes themselves a tequila sunrise?
I know. It doesn't, tequilas, they're not even good. That's the thing. They're terrible. But
I don't like tequila to begin with. So.
Well, but also they went to great pains and I may be giving more credit than credit is due, but several, i.e. more than three of the outdoor vista shots had sunrises or sunsets that looked like a tequila sunrise. So I'm assuming that was on purpose. If it was incidental, it was amazing coincidence. But I kind of believe it wasn't coincidence. I kind of believe that they probably tinted things purposefully that way. But that may be giving them way too much credit. Again, I don't know. But so do you want to dive into the plot?
I guess.
Otherwise it could be really short, 20 minutes of not really talking about the movie.
Well, I do have something else I'd rather talk about once we're done with Tequila Sunrise.
Okay, well, we can go through quickly. I mean, it's not... Do you have a plot summary?
Yeah, in my head. You want me to go for it? I bet I can do this. All right, let's start with Dale. Dale, played by Mel Gibson, he is helping a friend of his in a drug deal. Turns out it's his lawyer who was maybe paid by a client in drugs. And because he is a reformed drug dealer, he was going to help him sell this cocaine to get some money. But he sniffs out a sting operation. So he makes himself scarce. And we find out that there is a DEA agent who's just really just hot to trot for him, just really wants to bust him. And this DEA agent has enlisted the help of a local cop, a detective, sergeant maybe, I don't know, played by Kurt Russell, who turns out is a high school buddy of Dale, who may or may not actually want to arrest him if he catches him dealing drugs again. They have a weird, slightly homoerotic relationship with each other. So Kurt Russell and the DEA are tailing Mel Gibson, and they find he frequents a restaurant run by Joanne, who played by Michelle Pfeiffer. So they think that maybe she's involved in the drug business. They try and brace her. She doesn't fall for it. So they are surveilling the two of them together and separately. And Kurt Russell figures out that he's not doing any illegal business at the restaurant. He just has the hots for Joanne. But he's being really impotent about it. So instead, he swoops in and romances her, trying to get information about Dale. She falls for it because of reasons. So they end up starting a relationship. She eventually figures out that he's using her, probably only. He claims to have real feelings for her. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't matter. She eventually falls for Dale. They begin a relationship. Meanwhile, the DEA, stop me if I get any of this wrong. The DEA has enlisted the help of Mexican federales.
Yes.
Because that's what the DEA does on U.S. soil.
Apparently.
Because a renowned drug kingpin named Carlos, not a creative name, is supposedly coming to town. He and Dale have had business in the past. So they are hoping to catch Carlos with Mac and bust them both. They say that a bunch of times. So the Mexicans are helping the DEA, and Kurt Russell is maybe helping the DEA, but also antagonizing the DEA. While trying to seduce Joanne, while Joanne is starting up a relationship with Dale. It's very messy, very complicated. In a huge unexpected plot twist, Carlos is actually the head of the Mexican federales. Dun, dun, dun. So he sneaks into Dale's house while they're being surveilled by all the various agencies, and they play ping pong. I'm not making that up. And eventually they go to conclude their business, which is, I guess Dale's been holding on to $15 million or so of Carlos's, and he's come back to collect it. Turns out Dale has really been going legit the whole time. The informant that has been helping the DEA all along is Dale's friend and lawyer, the one he was helping with the deal in the beginning. Carlos figures that out. Kills him, wants to kill Joanne because she knows something.
Was it the lawyer's cousin?
I think his cousin was a lawyer. The same guy, right?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, doesn't matter. Yeah, so Carlos wants to kill Joanne because she knows about them and she can identify him. Dale won't let him. There's a confrontation. Dale's very clever. He eventually almost kills Carlos, but doesn't because he's just such a great guy. Dale, love that guy. But he helps Joanne escape. Then the DEA agent shows up and just goes all crazy, kills Carlos in cold blood, and then tries to murder Dale, who's trying to give up and turn himself in. So Kurt Russell shoots the DEA guy in the back, and then he brings Joanne to the beach, and they have like a Point Break-style reunion with Dale. Cut to credits. None of it makes any sense.
Yeah.
What did I miss?
Yeah, Mac's cousin Greg, played by Arliss Howard, is the DEA informer.
Yeah, that's the lawyer.
Is it?
100% positive. Does not affect my plot summary at all.
No, I'm just... Ari Gross played Andy Leonard, who was the lawyer. So they were different characters. Regardless, I think throughout this movie, again, these huge polar shifts. Early on, they make the point that Mac's trying to go straight, and they keep saying, oh, he's trying to go straight. He's building some hydroponic watering irrigation system thing. And people keep coming to him. His cousin keeps coming to him to try and get him to. It's always got another drug deal. And he's like, I don't want another drug deal. I'm out of this. And then we introduce his ex-wife, and the kid gets involved. They bring the kid in, which, again, unnecessary characters. Mm-hmm. It just added subplot that it created false tension that nobody cared about, or I didn't care about. It gave Joanne ammunition to be cranky and overreact, which I don't think she would really do if she were the character in the initial part of the movie, because she was a strong, pretty independent, knowledgeable woman that would have just been like, I'm done with this dude.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. But she doesn't. She acts like the wounded, jilted girlfriend, goes off on him and then goes crazy. And then as soon as she's confronted, backs down. So it makes no sense. I really wanted just to see her in a strong role. I think that's, I don't know, maybe. But it was that.
Agreed.
That was difficult. It was very difficult. There was some good. They laid some good foundation here and there, especially when Nick came back to the restaurant later in the movie to try and convince Joanne that he really did love her, and they had that whole bit. He had that whole big thing about, you know, how he realized that, you know, he was trying to use her for information, but then he realized he didn't care about that. He just wanted to be with her. And then she gets the phone call, and then they have that whole, he has that whole sleight of hand where he goes to the end of the bar where she's on the phone to get a pack of matches and he makes a big show of it to her. Like, I got to get some matches. That's why I'm here. And he goes back. And then she sees at where he's sitting, there is already a book of matches. And then she watches him hide the book of matches, which is the not so subtle way of saying, haha, I really know that you're an ass and you're making this all up.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a very clever bit of writing right there.
It was very clever. It was very wasted.
Yes.
The whole rain inside the restaurant business was unnecessary. The puddle and the skylight and the, like, I don't understand it gave them the chance to kiss, I guess, but it seemed so ham-handed. The kid character was ham-handed. The harpy ex-wife is cliche. And you're right, it was the worst like sex scene with slow-mo action and Jesse loved this movie for the sax music, by the way, because he's a big saxophone fan. So he's this was saxtastic.
Yeah, there was like body doubles and saxophones galore in the hot tub.
Yeah. Also, humping it out on top of a hot tub cover, not comfortable. That would not be a comfortable thing. They're not comfortable. I know, because I had to sit on one.
I think I saw in the trivia that it was so poorly constructed that they had to shut down production because Michelle Pfeiffer got just a really bad rash.
Ew. I did find it interesting that the movie open was an audio open. It was just a black screen with credits, and they had this audio exposition that was going on. And so you didn't know. You had no idea what was going on. You just hear the characters vamping back and forth, which was fine. Mm-hmm. And then the whole thing with the peanut shells, which they made a big deal of the peanut shells in the beginning and then never went back to it again. So that was the thing.
Yeah, well, that's how Dale knew that there were cops there.
Yeah, but I don't think detectives are that stupid, but I don't know.
The ones in this movie were.
Yeah, well, the awful jazzy synth soundtrack got to me after a while. It really started to get to me.
It got to you, like, all of a sudden you were on board with it?
No.
I'm really bummed that the people listening cannot see the Hall of Fame eye roll you just gave me.
And then I wrote this down. How can she love him? How is it possible that she can love him?
Which one?
Any, either, both.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. In the span of such a short period, how is it that she got such a huge romance that she was distraught when she thought he might be dead? Anyway, there was that. I did have to chuckle, though, when Raul Julia's character, when Carlos was like, grass is the future. Like, he didn't know how true it was. That made me laugh out loud.
I really liked him. He's the only one who looked like he was having fun in this movie.
He was having fun, but he was in a different movie.
100%. I think he was in Street Fighter.
I think a movie around him would have been fun and fantastic. I wanted to see that movie. Because he looked like fun. You know, he was singing. He was funny. He was witty. He had a presence. He played ping pong, which I think we can all appreciate. So, you know, he was giving serenades and
that was really him singing, right?
He's yeah, great voice. I believe so. I mean, I would
great voice.
Pretty sure it's him. So yeah, so it's just, but this movie just seems so wasted. That's the problem. Is there was, I think, a lot of talent potential, but it just didn't go.
Yeah, so many missed opportunities.
I mean, the plot is incidental and also not important, and we could beat it to death, but I don't think either of us wants to do that. I know that the parents either bought or rented this online, so they have watched it. So I'll be interesting.
I hope not. I hope they didn't spend any money on it. They could just watch it on HBO Max.
They can't use that at the cabin, though.
Weird.
I'm guessing it's something in the DSL on the speed, so... So, grade for this movie. I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know that it's a C movie, but I paused to give it a D, but it's right in that zone of like C-, D+. It's I don't know where to put it is the problem. I don't think it was awful. I mean, it wasn't an ugly movie. It had some great cinematography. It just, the writing was terrible, and Raul Julia did bring a lot to this. So I don't know, I guess I'll give it a C-, but with prejudice. So, I don't have anything better than that to say.
I think that's generous. This movie is a skip.
So you would say this movie's not worth it.
It isn't. It's not. I mean, there's so many better movies you could spend your time with. It's not even worth it if you're like a completionist for any of these stars. They're all so wasted in this movie. It's a bummer.
So what do you remember from the first time you saw it? Do you recall liking this movie the first time you saw it?
Yeah, but also I was like 13.
Sure.
Well, so
also, you know, at that point, it was still the 80s, 90s. And so that, yeah. I mean, so the combination of the two, I think, the combination of us no longer being adolescents and it no longer being in the 90s probably were to this movie's detriment.
Yeah. And around this time, I had probably three all-time favorite movies. Superman 2, The Lost Boys, and Lethal Weapon. So I would have watched anything Mel Gibson was in because I thought he was so tremendous in Lethal Weapon.
Well, if we look at about the time this movie, so for Kurt Russell in 86, Big Trouble in Little China, in 87, Overboard.
I also love Big Trouble in Little China.
87 was Overboard, which is Goldie Hawn and him, I think.
Yes.
And then 89's Tango and Cash, 91 is Backdraft. So he had a good run of movies there. For Mel Gibson at that time, Mad Max in 85, Lethal Weapon in 87, Lethal Weapon 2 in 89, Bird on a Wire in 90, which was Goldie Hawn.
It was.
Air America in 90, Hamlet in 90, Lethal Weapon 3 in 92. So they both were still bringing in good... I don't want to say good movies. They were both bringing in plenty of money for their acting talent in movies.
And Michelle Pfeiffer, she was... when was The Fabulous Baker Boys? Wasn't she nominated for an Oscar for that?
85, Lady Hawk. 86, Sweet Liberty. Was that Alan Alda?
I love Lady Hawk. I've never seen it.
Witches of Eastwick in 87.
Iconic.
Married to the Mob in 88. Oh, I love that movie. Dangerous Liaisons in 88. Fabulous Baker Boys in 89. The Russia House in 90, which was Dreck.
We need to watch Dangerous Liaisons.
Frankie and Johnny, 91. Batman Returns in 92, and so on. So she also was pulling in plenty.
Yeah. She's great. She's great.
You said we needed to watch Dangerous Liaisons?
I love that movie so much. John Malkovich is in that movie. He's going for it.
Glenn Close? Oh, I've never seen it.
Glenn Close, a very young Keanu Reeves trying to do a British accent. It's
terrible.
I feel bad for him when he's in scenes with Malkovich.
How have I not seen this movie? Swoozy Kurtz? Uma Thurman?
You've seen Cruel Intentions?
Yes, question mark.
Yeah. Ryan Phillippe, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, we
Reese Witherspoon.
We did it on the podcast.
Yeah. Same plot.
All right.
Same plot.
All right. Okay. Very good. All right.
Yeah, so Dangerous Liaisons is great. Glenn Close is so good.
It looks like, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a Glenn Close. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy notwithstanding. I don't really know that I've seen her in a lot of bad stuff. Bad roles.
She's great in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, she is. It's a little weird for her, but...
It's a nothing role, yeah.
I like Glenn Close just fine. I have an entire Los Angeles cast recording of her singing the Patti LuPone part in Sunset Boulevard, so...
Hmm? Nice.
Norma Desmond.
Did you ever watch the show Damages?
I haven't yet.
It's good.
I think was Damages the one that was filmed in Portland? I think it was filmed in Portland.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Maybe it was set in Portland. I don't remember. Anyway, doesn't matter. Unimportant. So, all right. So we're done. We can move on from the movie. I remembered what I was going to say. I'm writing it down. So you had something else to talk about that you would like?
Yeah, I mentioned that my wife and I just breezed through the entirety of Better Call Saul in a matter of a couple months. We watched all five seasons that are available. And it's so good. I cannot recommend it highly enough. We really find it way more enjoyable than Breaking Bad.
It's brighter.
It is, yeah. And Kim Wexler is an icon.
Well, Odenkirk is hilarious.
He's so good. He's so good. Michael McKean.
Very good.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think because of COVID, season six has been delayed by... I think it's going to be the final season has been delayed by a year. So we just have this... we have this need for prestige, like a prestige television show to watch. But also, I don't know how you're doing lately, but we're just exhausted every night. I don't know why. I don't know if it's time of year or pandemic fatigue or what's going on, but we're exhausted. So we had some high criteria. We wanted to watch a prestige drama, something that we knew was going to be good and we could sink our teeth into, but also something that we didn't have to pay attention to. Because neither one, the likelihood of both of us making it through an entire 45 minutes of a television show is, you know, once we settle into bed is highly unlikely. So we decided we were going to rewatch an older show that we thought was really good. So we started rewatching Mad Men, which is really good. But also it's super heavy. It's a show that you need to pay attention to. So good though. So we took a break from that, and instead we started rewatching The Americans.
Oh, that's not dark or anything.
But it's so good.
It is so good. I actually do want to go back and watch it. I want to just smack Brother E. He needs to watch it. Because I would love to discuss it.
I am amazed. We've watched the first three episodes of season one at this point, and I am so amazed by how tight that show is. It's just like how tightly written it is. Because in the pilot, they're setting up things that they pay off 4 or 5 years later. Sometimes it gets paid off in the finale.
It's some of the best writing that I have witnessed on scripted TV.
Yeah, it's so great. And Kerry Russell is so good from the jump.
Yes.
I mean, Matthew Rhys, he's really good. His character in the pilot is a little different than the rest of the show. He's a little bit more jovial. But Kerry Russell is just from the opening scenes. She's just fierce force of nature. Yeah, and the music in it. I mean,
well, the whole time capsule effect of it, because they got it right. I don't know how good your memory is of those years, but to me, watching it, everything was right. The cereal boxes, the home mm-hmm. decor, the cars, the music,
the Corning wire,
the syntax that people used, the news stories. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was some things that there was some time shifting that happened. But to me, I watching an episode, I knew exactly where in time from my experience living it. I knew in time where they were supposed to be. And so that to me gave me extra tension in the show, because I knew what was actually happening in the world. So
they talk about real world events.
Yeah.
Timeline settings.
Yeah. And they had a great cast, and they also got great, supporting actors and actresses. I mean, their secondary mm-hmm. characters that were only woven in and out of a couple episodes were still great. So
Agent Gadd, he's so good. Stan's boss, he's so good.
Yes.
And he doesn't get much screen time episode to episode, but he kills it. The male robot. Love the male robot. We haven't been reintroduced to the male robot yet. But the kids are actually really good actors.
Yes.
They really cast those kids really well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great, Brother E. You gotta watch it. We gotta talk about it. Yeah. I should put it back on the list.
Yeah, so I guess I'm changing my tune since Eric hasn't seen it. I guess I don't want to talk about it and give anything away. But so far the rewatch is extremely rewarding. It is such a confidently made show. I'm I'm so grateful that they gave it its entire run, because I don't think hardly anybody watched it when I was on TV.
No, I think you're right. My only problem with it is it was so tension inducing that we had to stop watching it late at night, because I wouldn't be able to. It would just, I would be so keyed up, I couldn't wind down enough to sleep, and it wasn't something I could watch. For me, it wasn't something I could watch two episodes in a row. I couldn't binge it. There was no way. It's just so dark in some ways. And the tension was just so, and I know it's all imagined tension, because a lot of it's just inside your own head, but that's how I know it was good writing. It's because I projected all this tension into it that wasn't really necessarily there.
Well, a lot of it is just, all of it is written on Philip's face and Elizabeth's just piercing gaze.
Well, her body language in general, she never mm-hmm. had to talk, because you knew exactly nope. what was happening. Which I think she probably did not get anywhere near the credit she should have. Nope. I think you're right. I think the show is severely underrated. Part of me really wants them to like reboot it for the, you know, for the later years, so we can see their story.
Yeah.
And the kids growing up to work for the FBI or something.
Yeah. We got to talk Eric into watching it so we can all talk about it.
Agreed.
But I think all of us have pretty, we're spaced far enough out that I think all of us have like a different generational take on that period of time.
You bet. Yes, I would agree with that very much. If you want a lighter lift, that's only 22 minutes a pop, but is actually, I've found now that I think we're four seasons in, is pretty amazingly funny, is Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, we've started watching that.
It gets better. Yeah. The first
season, we fell off of it after about five episodes.
Yeah, the first season's a little, but by the time you get to the second season, it's some funny shit. It is hilarious. It's also more hilarious when you realize that, you know, Eugene Levy and Dan Levy is father and son. So, mm-hmm. and then Twyla, the waitress, is the sister daughter. So there's three of them in the show, which is kind of funny. So,
yeah, and Dan Levy is so funny. Just everything he says is hilarious, whether or not it's intended to be.
Well, and he does he deadpans
mm-hmm.
his incredulity in such a way that you believe he believes that.
Yet somehow he's not the butt of the joke. I don't understand how he's not.
That's good writing. So,
yeah.
The first season is rough, but once you get past the first season, it gets so much. It is hilarious. That's one of the things we can actually binge through, which I'm trying not to, because you know that we're through it quickly. And then lately in rotation's been the latest season of the British Bake Off. So,
Yeah, we binged a bunch of those.
Nah, I won't binge them. Jesse's like, well, watch the next one. I'm like, no, there's not enough of them. Let's see. So the Americans, and did you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay. So on Better Call Saul, I will tell you that I am. I have about an hour and a half left of, I think, about a 9-hour book called Poisoned by Alan Bell. It is his kind of self-journey autobiography, if you will, about how he had a huge life-threatening illness response and body shutdown to sick building syndrome and environmental toxins.
Sounds unpleasant.
To the point where he lost basically almost his career and his livelihood and his wife, and was literally living in a bubble and nobody could figure out what's wrong with him. And as it turns out, he did indeed have toxin syndrome. He was basically poisoned. But they were talking about, he's talking about through the book about how his journey has been, about how he went to clinic to clinic to clinic to specialist all around the world, all around the States. And then he, I guess he talked to a couple other clinics, but basically, you know, nobody could really find out what was wrong with him. They knew there was something wrong with him, but they couldn't get at the root of what was wrong with him. And it turns out environmental toxins at one point from a building set him off, and then that poisoned him enough that the rest of his body just kept getting more and more sensitive to the environment around him, and he couldn't get desensitized. And so he started suffering all these ailments, not the least of which was he couldn't be around a television set because the electromagnetic interference would cause him seizures. Ugh. So that reminds me of the Michael McKean character in Better Call Saul, about how, you know, he's once shielded by everything. And so there is a little parallel there that I'm listening to this guy's story, I'm like, this is fascinating, because there's a little bit of parallel in there.
That character on Better Call Saul is so fascinating because he's always right. He's always right, but you hate him for it.
That's good writing.
Hate him for it. Yeah. Oh, it's great. But like in the moment, it feels like he's not right, but later on, always 100% right.
So it's a fascinating book. It's free on Audible. It's one of the free choices, I think.
Oh, nice.
So if you have an Audible account, I would recommend it. I'm almost done with the book. I mean, I haven't gotten to the end, so I'm hoping that there's a happy ending. I believe he's still alive. I think he's still alive. So I think there is a happy ending. But it's been for me, it's been fascinating because I work in the medical field and I see stuff all the time where I hear other clients talk about things, and I hear clients talk amongst themselves, and I hear them where they will tell their family members that you're imagining that. And it always is amazing to me that you care about somebody, you want to see them get better, but then you're also telling them you can't possibly have this illness. This possibly can't be wrong with you. So I guess the moral of the story is that it's a little humbling, but it's a great story so far. So free and Audible, plug for Audible. I like Audible. I've been going through a lot of books lately. But I do appreciate your, the COVID fatigue, the lockdown fatigue. I really don't know, because I've been that way for like 18 months. So everything for me is just a fatigue at this point. So it's been a bit of a week and a half. They closed the dog park across the street to do some maintenance. So it's been a little entertaining for me because they put locks on the gates. So people drive up, park their car, get their dogs out, go to the gates, and the gates don't open, and they're pissed off because now they have these super excited dogs that can't go into the park, and then they have to drive the dog home. And I know that Bo would have gone ballistic. Like, just, he would have been like this, just apoplectic with rage on the drive home. Griffin doesn't care, but he doesn't get it anyway. So there's been that, and that's been fun and interesting. For my home office, I bought two 24-inch high-definition Vizio television sets to be monitors for my office setup. So when I started having to work from home, I could not function on my work laptop because I have a docking station in my office that hooks up to two monitors in my office. And okay. I could not work from home for any meaningful period of time with any amount of productivity on the laptop. It is, to me, completely impractical. I've never actually used my laptop as a laptop ever. like in meetings, or very, very rarely have I ever taken it with me to an event at work where I've utilized it in any meaningful manner. It's either been giving a presentation to one of the projected television sets, which is anybody can do, or it's just a paperweight. But in my office, I have a docking station. I made them buy me a docking station for home so that I can have a keyboard, mouse, and monitor. So I had two. I bought them at the same time at Best Buy. They weren't expensive, which is why I bought them. They're cheaper than monitors, and I really didn't, since I'm not gaming on them and I'm not editing photos and I'm not, like, I don't have any plans to do any video. Like, there's nothing that needs to be super fancy high definition. So they don't need to be computer monitors. They can just be TVs, which there's not a lot of difference. There's a little difference, but for my eyes and for what I'm doing for work, I don't. It's inconsequential. So for the money, it wasn't worth spending extra money for the monitors. So the TVs, bought them at the same time, about this time last year, I think middle of May is when I bought them. I think about October, November, my left monitor started having burn-in lines. And it's an LED TV. So I thought, well, that's shouldn't be happening. And then they started to multiply over time. And so I tried to make a warranty claim. And they said, at that time, we were locked down. And they said, sorry, we're not doing any warranty work, repair, or referrals right now because nobody can do anything. So try again later, please. So I'm thinking, well, that's great. As long as you will extend my warranty when... You know, hopefully we're not locked down to this super long point in time where you just basically go past my warranty date. So I started documenting my problems. And I finally, about 3 weeks ago, I finally got through to Vizio. And they set everything up and they said, okay. And so they wanted all this crazy stuff. They wanted me to, I had to have a picture of the TV on. Had to show all four corners of the TV.
Okay. It's very specific.
It was, because I took pictures of the TV, including the diagnostic screen that the TV has, which actually tells you the serial number of the TV, the firmware of the TV, you know, what model, when it was purchased. So it's like, it's a screen of their own software that gives them all the diagnostic codes. That wasn't useful. They couldn't use that. They needed a picture of the TV itself. Like, okay. So I went back and forth with customer service, and basically they said, well, here's your option. We're not going to have you send it in for repair, and we're not going to send a guy to your house to repair it. So, if you give us a credit card, we will just send you a replacement TV and you can send your TV back in the same box. And as long as we get the new TV back or the old TV back within a couple weeks, you won't be charged for it. If you don't get it back to us, you will get charged whatever. It was like $200 or something, whatever, which is fine. So So that happened. I got the new TV, and it's identical. It's the same model and everything. I mean, it's same remote control works and looks the same. Get it all hooked up. Send the old one back. Had to find a FedEx drop-off point, which isn't as easy as I thought it would be. And then today, I'm looking, and I realized as I'm at work, I'm doing some work, I have the same screen up on both my monitors because I had a browser window open, and I opened the same program in two browser windows for some reason because I wasn't paying attention. And the colors don't match.
Oh.
And it's not that the colors don't match like a little bit. It's like the colors don't match a lot. A lot enough that I thought there must be a setting wrong in here somewhere. One of the monitors set differently than one another. Nope. Every single color, hue, contrast, and brightness setting is identical, including to the point where I actually went back, reset both of them to factory, and then updated them the firmware, and they're both the same. So now I'm like, God damn it. So now I don't know if the other TV is screwed, if my old TV, not the new one, if the old one was screwed for color, or if the new one's screwed for color, and I'm going to have to get it returned as well. So It's just like, oh, I just wanted it to work. Just why? Why did I have to notice?
If you hadn't opened the same window on both TVs, would you even notice?
Nope.
But now you can't unsee it?
Nope. And now I notice it on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now I like move windows back and forth. And I'm like, oh, damn it. So it harkens back to you in the football game in the Lions. Like, you can't unsee it. Like, I can't unring the bell. Now I know this thing exists. And now I was like, oh. So. And I would take a picture of it to show you the color difference, because it's obvious it's not the same. But I don't know that the picture would exemplify that. But it's just so irritating. So I thought you would appreciate that.
Yeah, man, Vizio, they're not expensive.
You know, the thing though is my giant big screen TV in my living room is a Vizio, and it's been the best TV I've ever had.
Oh, I've had several Vizios. They're great. They're good. They're cheap. You don't feel bad about replacing them in a couple years if you need to.
Well, and when I was at Costco, because I bought my big widescreen TV, whatever it is, I don't know what, 65 inch or something, whatever the hell, it's giant, bigger than I need. When I went to buy it at Costco, it looked better than the Samsung. It looked better than the LG. Unless I went up to like some super like $5,000 TV, which I was not going to spend. Like, I had a set point, like, I'm not spending more than $600 on a TV. That's my limit. So Jesse's like, well, you know, but this one, I'm like, I'm not spending that much money. Like, I can't. Like, I don't have it in me. Like, I waited a long time to get a high definition television when they came out. Like, I waited years because I just wouldn't spend the money on it. And we don't, like, I don't have a 4K TV because I'm just not willing to spend the money on it. Although, I think now I don't have an option. I think they're pretty much all 4K now. Because, you know, now is going to be the 8K or whatever the hell. So,
by the way, my PS5 looks amazing on my LG OLED TV.
Is it a 4K?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, 4K with the variable frame rate. It's, oh, it's so great.
I don't think I have anything that would output 4K. Well, my PC would. I take it back. But I would my Xbox? Maybe. I think my Xbox would. Maybe.
Yeah, I bet it would.
I have the newer of the last model Xbox. I think it would. My Apple TV, though, I don't have a 4K Apple TV. My Blu-ray player is not. It's just a Blu-ray. It's not 4K. So, yeah. So, but again, like, because Jesse's like, you know, it would be better for you. I'm like, I have to wear glasses at this point to see the TV to game. I don't know that 4K is going to really matter that much for me. If I already have to have corrective lenses just to see, I don't know that 4K is going to be that much better for me. I mean, it'll look sharper, sure. But I don't know that that's a selling point. So, plus my old TV is just fine. I shouldn't say anything. Knock on wood. I should just be happy. Because I have to buy air conditioning. It's going to have to be the next expense. The house is super well insulated, like Alaska houses. Yeah, not appreciating it.
Not now that it's warm out.
Yeah, because I think right now it got up to like 77 today outside.
Ooh.
And right now in my bedroom it is 76 degrees, and in my office here it's 78 degrees.
Yeah, we saw 50 for the first time this year.
How's your snow?
And that's only because we left Anchorage.
How's your snow levels?
Still pretty high. Still pretty high.
Gonna be a long breakup.
I'm actually worried that our pod has been caved in.
Ooh.
By the snow load.
Do you think that's likely?
I was looking at it as we drove in today. I was like, that does not look right. So I'm gonna go probably tomorrow. I'm gonna go push the rest of the snow off and see if our pod is destroyed or not.
It's had some unfortunate catastrophic accident.
Yeah.
Now you own it outright, right?
Yes, we do.
Hmm.
Yay.
I imagine that's an expensive fix too.
Probably.
Oh, well, fingers crossed. I hope it's just like animals made the snow funny.
We'll see.
Yeah, it could have been a moose knocking something over or something. I mean, who knows? I don't know. We'll go with that. Let's see. What is today? So next week, you're off. And Eric and I can't remember what I picked.
You picked The Lighthouse.
Oh, that's right. I need to put it on the calendar. Have you seen it?
Nope.
Are you going to watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I am
very excited for you.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
I have mixed feelings about it because I'm not a big Robert Pattinson fan, but I'm a William Dafoe fan. So I'm, I don't know, I'm right in the middle. It looks a little David Lynchian, so.
I think Robert Pattinson's good.
Oh.
I think he gets a bad rap for being in the Twilight movies.
I think I saw him, I want to say I saw him maybe on Saturday Night Live. Was he on Saturday Night Live? I saw him somewhere and probably was just underwhelmed. But again, if it was Saturday Night Live, it's not hard to be underwhelming these days. When I saw the Lighthouse, it looked a little bit to me like it was kind of Twin Peaksy, David Lynchian, kind of crazy. It has that kind of that vibe to it. So, which is, again, that's a 50-50. Could be good, could be bad. We'll see.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you.